This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I always have a very special place in my heart for a Michigander, so I was so happy when I stumbled upon a new release by an author that I had never heard about, but whose name I will never forget because I love her last name. And her name is Peg Herring. Hi, Peg, are you there?
I am there. Hi, Kathy.
Oh, okay. Well, I wish you were here. You were there. I am here. And it is it is so nice to talk to you. As I said, I love your name. The only thing I love more than herring is Michigan trout. But I will settle for a herring today.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so, wow, Peg. First of all, I don't know, you owe me something.
All right.
Because, you know, I wake up every morning at 5 o'clock. That's my day starts at 5 o'clock. Okay. And it is completely irresponsible of you to keep me up until 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, really, what is wrong with you, girl?
Wow. I'll work on that.
You know, there I am at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I realized, I looked at my clock, and I said, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still reading this book?
Well, I'm pleased to hear it. I'm sorry about your sleep deprivation.
Don't worry. I love it. It is called, well, first of all, it's funny how I found you, because I mosey along in Amazon. I'm searching always for new books and something to read. And, you know, like I haven't read enough. 10,000 books isn't enough for me. You know, I've got to add a few more. And
right.
You know, and I'm moseying along, and there I see this new release, and I kidnapped.org, and I thought, oh, that is a nice title. And so I got it, and I started reading it. Of course, it's set in Georgia, so I didn't know yet that you were a Michigander. But, you know, I would have still probably invited you even if you came from Georgia. But, you know, this was a bonus for me. And so I'm reading this book, and I'm reading this book, and I can't put it down. It is so good. It is so funny. And
well, that's nice to hear. Thank you.
Well, I'll let you tell people about it because it is a clever take on a it's just adorable. And I love the title. As I said, that got me first, kidnap.org. When you see that title, you think, well, I have to read this. And then the first chapter, of course, is so good. You really know how to grab your reader. So what do you want to give away? Because it is a great story. It's about, it starts off about a woman named Robin Parsons. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of sick and tired of a lot of things. Oh, boy.
Well, I think Robin represents a lot of us. We just feel like the system is sort of in place, and it when it steps on you, there's nothing you can do about it. And so Robin has had a really bad day in the first chapter.
And yes.
And she finds out that her neighbor is also having a bad day. And those two things put together are sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. And she decides, you know, we're not going to take it.
Why should we take it anymore? Let's get together. Oh, boy. Let's get a gang together and do a little.
Yeah. You know, kidnapping.
Well, you know, I think many of us have had that bad day at work. Mm-hmm. And we know what. So immediately, I mean, that really grabs most people. I can't think of anyone who has had a bad day at work, actually. You know, unless you work for yourself, and even if you work for yourself, sometimes you hate your own self. So you're thinking, what the heck? I hate everybody here today. But what you do with this book and the adventures that you take Robin and let's call them the crew, her gang, whatever, that sort of forms around her, sort of by happenstance, is really fun.
Well, thank you. I have to confess that when I first wrote it, it was just kind of a collection of, okay, this is what they did first, and this is what they did second, and this is what they did third. And I submitted it to my editor, and she is wonderful, and she said, this needs some kind of overarching theme. There has to be something that ties all these things together. And I had kind of mentioned that Robin had a, you know, bad childhood, and so I took that and went back and kind of connected the incidents, the different kidnappings in the book, making it into sort of a journey for Robin to get in touch with what happened to her as a child and feel like she is doing something about people like her.
Exactly. And she certainly does something. Oh boy. And it is, as I said, haven't been very many books recently that have kept me up until 3 o'clock in the morning. Really. This is the first time like in a long time. And I just had to read it. And of course I'm reading it, at one point I realized, okay, well, this is the start of a series, because once you've developed this gang of hers, they're right. All so good. They're all so interesting, and we won't give anything away because people have to read it, because it really, you do the reveal so nicely. So there's one, you know, thing after one little thing after another, and you have all these reveals, and suddenly somebody that you thought wasn't something, and yeah, it's just beautifully done, really beautifully done.
Well, there's been a discussion on Facebook among readers, and I guess the question that, you know, you alluded to, do you think that after you've read 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 books, it's hard to find something that surprises you?
Yeah.
Because that's what, you know, I tried to do with this, is not take it in terribly traditional directions, which makes it less of a mystery and more of something else, which that was another problem. I don't really know what you call this book. I called it a caper novel, and I had someone say to me, I had to look that up. I don't know what a caper novel is.
Okay, well, yeah, they think maybe it's something you put on a pizza or something. I don't know. Whatever. Speaking of that, how is Michigan? I have to bring this back to Michigan, because of course that was like, you know, I have this wonderful, wonderful treat here, your book. And I think, what a great writer. What a fantastic, you know, I found a real treasure here. And then of course I find Michigan connection. Well, not only that, you actually know, I think you have been to the town where I was born.
Yes.
Baraga, yes. Michigan.
Yep. Yeah. My sister lived in Baraga, and she worked at the hospital in Marquette and different hospitals up there. She's a nurse. So, yes, I've been all over.
So
and I love it. Well, I just love waterfalls, lots of trees. Love it.
Well, you know, it's so funny, because I'm always talking. I always talk to people about Michigan and of course, about being a youper, because that's the most important thing about Michigan.
Yes.
I mean, what else is important in life? You know, and to be a youper, and how very special youpers are. You know, we are, of course, famous for our brilliance and our wit and our charm,
yes,
our beauty, and, oh, you know, we could go on. And the fact that we drink a lot of coffee.
Yes.
Yeah. And I had one author on the other day who said, yeah, but youpers also drink a lot. I said, yeah, but that, you know,
winters.
We drink, but then we have the coffee to offset the other things. So it balances out. It, you know, I mean, really. And of course, we always have pasties. And yep. So we're just really happy people.
Well, it really is a unique culture. And I was surprised. You know, I have another series under another name, and there's some travel in the UP in that series, and there were people who wrote to me and said, I didn't know, you know, that there was a UP.
I know. I tell people that. Oh, it was funny. When I was in Europe and I tell people, you know, I'm from the UP, Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They absolutely had no idea. But of course, right. you know, up until not too long ago, some map makers were still putting the UP as part of Canada. So, you know, actually, you know, this is a secret mission of UPers. We really don't want anybody to know. And,
and we
sometimes resent that bridge that they built. It was nice in the old days when we had the ferry and not too many people could come across.
Yes. Well, I'm sure you know that people like me are called trolls because we live under the bridge.
Yes. Yes.
And
I've been trying to find out what did we used to call people who lived on that side before we had the bridge.
I don't know.
They were under the ferries.
Flatlanders.
Flatlanders. Yeah, probably yeah. Flatlanders. Because you know we have a few terms like that. But it is very special. And so for me to have somebody who's actually been to Berriga, because not too many people have been to Berriga, you know, it's funny. I was telling somebody recently that, you know, we lived in Berriga, but we had a summer house on the lake. I mean, like Berriga was too big for us, 1,200 people. You know, we had the camp over, you know, on the west side over by Misery
right.
Bay. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, didn't everybody who lives in a town with more than 1,000 people need a getaway? I mean, who can live in a big...
Well, yeah. No, you have to have deer camp and you have to have the house on the lake and the house on the river. And...
Oh, that's it. We did. And it was... lots of fun. And my brother, well, I have lots of cousins up there, tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
Still, they're all in the Pelkey area. And
okay.
And my brother lives up there. He had been a, you know, big business guy and everything in Detroit. And then one day he looked at his wife and she was working for Hudson's department store. And she was a big executive. And then one day he looked at her and she looked at him and he said, "Why don't we move back to the farm?" Now,
so are you Finlanders?
And my brother was like, when he was like 3 years old when we left, he didn't know anything about farming. But he moved to Pelkey with the idea that I'm going to farm. And but you know, he learned. They took classes in Houghton, uh-huh. you know, at the college there, and Michigan Tech, which is a wonderful college for anybody who really. Wants to study technology and mining, which there's a big future in mining. And I always tell people, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful, Michigan Tech is a wonderful place, and all you have to do is get used to snow.
Yes.
little thing like that.
And isn't it like five guys for every girl up there?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, That is a problem.
Not for the guys.
But boy, the girls that you get up there are really super. So,
yeah. Yes. Very intelligent.
Exactly. Very intelligent. Beautiful. So, you do have, which of your series has UP mentions?
The Sleuth Sisters is a series that is set in Michigan, and it's kind of set around Alpena area. So it's on Lake Huron. But they go, in the first book, they go up into the UP, one of them very reluctantly because she doesn't believe in camping. And so that's where I ran into interesting things when they made it an audio book because the actors didn't know what a pasty was. They called them pasties. and they couldn't pronounce any of the towns that they went to. So Mackinac City was mangled, and Escanaba was mangled, and Munising was mangled. But we finally got it straightened around, and I really like that series because it is Michigan, and it's really easy for me to, you know, to imagine. Where with the kidnap.org, I had to study up on every place they went.
They do go a lot of places. That's one of the exciting things about kidnap.org. They move around, and... They have a reason, but I think it's a delightful book, and I know it's going to be a delightful series. So I'm already looking forward to the next one. I don't know if you've started yet. I know you're very busy because you have how many series do you write?
Oh, goodness. Well, I've finished a couple. I started out as a historical novelist, and I wrote a series for them, and I finished that. And then I did a series for a different publisher, and actually I did two for them and finished both of those. I have a problem with attention deficit, I guess. You know, after three or four books, I'm ready to move on to something else. So those series are all done. So the one that is continuing right now is The Sleuth Sisters, which is I write as Maggie Pill. And then, as you say, I would like to make Kidnap.org into a series. I think there are at least a couple more possibilities for my little gang.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm looking forward to it.
And, oh, good.
And, you know, I know that you also teach writing and try to encourage people to write. So tell us a little bit about that work.
Okay. Well, my career was English teacher. And then when I got into publishing, I decided to put those two things together. And so I go to libraries usually, but to groups and whatever, and try to help people who would like to write a book understand the process. And actually, I just met with a young man yesterday who wants to write a book, and I sat down, and the first thing he said to me was, "Now, how much is this going to cost me?" And I said, "Well, sweetie, if you do it right, they're going to pay you." And he was so excited because he didn't realize that there were actually agents out there who would, you know, get you money for a book. So there's a lot of confusion about what's going on today in the writing world and how much you have to do to become a traditional writer or a self-published writer, whichever whichever is best for an individual person.
And so you enjoy doing this? You enjoy teaching?
It's always fun. Sometimes it's a little hard to disappoint people. I've had people come to workshops and tell me that they've never turned on a computer before, but they want to write a book. And you have to look at that person and say, it's probably not going to happen, you know, if you don't know anything about the computer. I have never met my agent. I have never met my publishers. Everything is done on the computer. So one of the things that you almost have to be is, you know, halfway computer literate just to keep up with what's going on in writing today.
That's true. And having a writer's platform is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from Facebook to Twitter to all of these things that you mentioned that you're on Facebook. Yep. You do a lot on Facebook?
I do. I think Facebook, for me, is probably my most active place. I can do Twitter and I can do LinkedIn and some of those other ones, but Facebook it just works for me. And I have other writers who tell me, oh, they like Instagram or I can't even remember some of the other ones, whatever works for you as a person, I think, is where you need to concentrate your energies, because you could spend all day trying to find a new place to post your book.
Now, you mentioned that you have an agent. How did you find your agent?
Well, I actually don't have one anymore. When I went off on my own, we separated ways. But what I did back in the day was I wrote letters every week. I sent out letters to agents and said, this is what I have to offer. And finally, after I think it was almost a year, I got two. I got one that wanted one book I had and another that wanted a different book. So I worked with both of them, and one of them didn't work out, but the second one did. So she was my agent for several years. But it's kind of a long, hard process. You don't just call somebody up and say, be my agent.
Well, that's true. And I've been trying to explain that also when I attend writers' events. And that's why I like to bring on agents to talk to the listeners and to tell them that, you know, it's a process. You have to, in many ways, think of writing a book as a business. you yes. have this wonderful creative side. You come out with an idea for a cupcake bakery, and you have all these wonderful recipes in your head, but then you have to actually make them, and you actually have to, you know, do all the business around setting up a shop. And it's in many ways, it's the same with writing a book nowadays.
Yes, it's almost half and half. People think, you know, that you sit down and do the, like you say, the creative process. But I probably spend almost as much time promoting, and that includes going places, you know, live and working online and sending out emails and all those things that, because there are, what did I just read, 700,000 books published last year, self-published, you know, to get noticed in a field that large, it takes a lot of work. You're not going to just luck into, you know, somebody saying, hey, everybody in the world should read this book.
Well,
I'm so grateful to you.
Well, I feel like I lucked into you because it really, a great title. I mean, that helped. I think that great title, and I love the picture. I love the cover art.
Did you know that there are people, I don't know how old you are, but I had people ask me why they had black lines over their eyes.
Okay.
Because that's not done anymore. That was done, you know, back when people were ashamed to be seen doing things.
Yes, well, I got the idea. You see, that I'm very clever. Well, I'm a youper. What do you want? You know,
we
get these things. And so I was so thrilled to find your book and to find you. I think it's wonderful. I'm going to put your book on my summer reading list because I think it's just perfect. I'm going to put a warning. Like, please, please don't have something in the oven when you're reading this book because you'll forget it. Don't have a pot boiling, you know, and just be careful because once you start, you can't stop this book. It's really great. And so, you know, Peg, I just want to thank you so much for being on today. And I will tell everyone about your book because it really is a fun book, a great read. And
I thank you very much. And I appreciate, you know, I've been listening to your radio shows, and this is wonderful. I appreciate all the work that you do.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying it. I love when I talk to all these wonderful, you know, best-selling authors and other mystery writer America Grandmasters, but I feel a special thrill when I find somebody who, you know, isn't really super famous yet, but we can hope. And I could, you know, I'm a screenwriter. I could turn this into a heck of a movie. I love this book.
Well, you go right ahead and do that.
Okay, and tell everyone your website.
www.pegherring.com.
And what? It's easy name to remember, herring. It's wonderful. Yeah. I could eat herring every single day of the, you know, I'm one of these crazy Finlanders that we can eat fish every day, first of all, and throw in a few pasties. Not pasties, pasties. We want pasties. And of course, a lot of coffee. So it was great talking to you. And I will look forward to having you on when the next book comes out.
Well, I appreciate that, Patsy. Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Peg. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to have a quick commercial, and then we're going to be right back with somebody really, really fun.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tour, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have a very special guest, Chris Rabenstein. Hi, Chris.
Patsy, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, you know, I was so sweet of your publicist to send me a note and say, well, you must know that Rabenstein is rhymes with Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, you're right. You know, it also means great. It's gravestone in German, so there you go.
You know, and I've had so many Steins and Steens on recently, and half the time I'm getting it wrong, and they always correct me. So I thought, what a sweet publicist to send me that. And
yeah,
I hope,
very nice of her. It happens all the time.
I hope she wasn't thinking that, you know, I'm illiterate or something. But anyway, and nice. I liked it. I thought it was delightful. Well, you know, I don't know where to start with you because you are so wonderful. And it's so funny.
Thank you.
First of all, I have to love a guy who knows how to spell fun.
Ah.
Now, can you spell fun for me with seven
S-U-N,
letters?
Fun no, in the sun.
No, not fun in the sun. Reading, R-E-A-I.
R-E-A-D-I-N-G. That's what I tried to do, is make reading fun for kids and give them books that they just won't put down.
Well, you know, I'm not sure about kids. These books are really not just for kids. I know they're marketed for kids, and I know they always say, you know, of whatever age, like 3 years old. We're all, you know, kids at heart, because your books are so much fun to read, and they are so delightful that everybody should read them. I don't. 80-year-old can read it and have just as much fun. And
yeah, I do hear from a lot of adults who are all child at heart, and I think these kind of books have like stories and great characters and lots of action, and they're just a lot of fun. Well, thank you for saying that.
Well, they are, and you are a man after my own heart, somebody who loves books and loves libraries and has made a real goal of getting kids to read, which is something that I as a child, I started reading very young. And I am so grateful that this came to me, because reading is like a center thing of my life. I love books, and I think it's so wonderful when people encourage children to read.
Well, that's great. I come from the opposite. When I was a kid, I didn't like to read. So I'm trying to write the kind of stories that would have hooked me when I was a kid, and that are just kind of fast-paced and full of fun. And I was what they called a reluctant reader, but I actually kind of think that they are just very super critical readers who want to be entertained and know exactly what they like.
Well, I'm going to read from your book. I don't know if you go on tour, and I'm going to read something. When you live in a motel, I told my audience, You never know when your neighbors might be fiendish jewel thieves. Ah, like always, the whole cafeteria was hanging on my every word. Even the lunch ladies in their plastic shower caps had come out to hear what I'd say next. It was so quiet you could hear a straw squeak its way into a milk carton. Ah, I love that opening. It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
It's great. Yeah, first of all, I want to say one of the things that hit me is milk carton. I thought, oh, do they still let kids have milk cartons? I thought maybe they're now into, you know, some fancy water. But anyway, I thought maybe they have to have spring water. I didn't know kids could still have milk cartons. But I love this. Well, first of all, you're very descriptive. So I right away was back in that cafeteria with those milk cartons and with those with those lovely ladies, the lunch ladies. You're so descriptive. You really grab a kid or any reader and get them right there into the mix.
Well, that's why when I go on school visits, I always tell kids that first sentence and that first like page is so important because you got to grab and hook your reader and pull them in.
Well,
that's what I'm always trying to do.
You certainly do. And of course, we have to, you know, I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. And I know that this, of course, this story is set at in St. Pete's Beach, which is, you know, about 30 minutes from me. And
exactly.
So,
that's because I used to go down there. I still go down there because my mom's in St. Petersburg and my grandmother was in St. Petersburg. So I've been going to St. Petersburg, Florida since 1955.
Well, why didn't you come here to the studio for this interview? Where are you? Are you in New York?
I'm in New York City now.
Well,
when
you come down next time to St. Pete, you have to come into the studio so I can
definitely
have you,
do that. Yeah.
Have you
well,
right
definitely.
Here. And you can do one of your comedy routines because I have to tell everybody that you also a famous comedian, and you worked with some of the best comedians in the world, right?
Yeah, when I first moved to New York City, I was doing improvisational comedy. We had a guy named Bruce Willis in our troupe. He shaved his head, moved to California. We don't know what happened to him. And late Robin Williams, whenever he was in New York, he'd jump up on stage with us, and I got to make up stories and songs with him, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, I need you to come here in the studio because I also know that you used to write ad copies for many famous companies, along with somebody else who...
Mr. James Patterson was my first boss in advertising. People always forget that's how he got started, too. And I just think there's a connection between what we learned in advertising about grabbing people's attention and writing these books that grab the kids' attention.
Well, I need you to come and write an ad for my radio show because...
Okay.
You know, I do because, you know, I came into this, I just celebrated my second anniversary, and when I came into radio, I had never done anything like this. I didn't know anything about it, didn't know anything about advertising or ad, you know, I didn't even know how to, actually, I didn't know where the, there was, you know, there's buttons here in front of the mm-hmm. microphone. I didn't know any of that stuff. And so it was really funny. And then I've had to come out with ads, but I know that you wrote ads for some really famous companies.
Yeah, 7-Up and KFC and Dr. Pepper and Chef Boyardee and boy, went on and on. The list goes on. It was a lot of fun, and one of my favorite things to do was to write radio commercials because I worked my way through college by being a radio disc jockey. So it's good to be back on the radio.
Well, so you know what it's like, and you know what we need. So you're going to come down here. You have to come down and see your family. You know, you have to always be coming down here to see your family, and you just let me know in advance, and I even if I have somebody booked, I'm gonna just knock them right out. That's it. If I have you, you're going to come into the studio because, well, I don't know where to start. Let's talk about this book, but let's talk about the other books because you know I think that people just should read your books. The new book, of course, is called Welcome to Wonderland Number 2, Beach Party Surf Monkey, and. That's what
I
read.
It's a lot of fun because I also, as a kid, I used to always love those Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello movies. So I thought, what if a movie like that, someone was trying to remake that with modern pop stars, and that could take place at the Wonderland Motel? Because years ago when I worked in advertising, I actually shot a commercial in Hawaii at the hotel where Elvis Presley did Blue Hawaii. And that hotel was famous 30 years later. Oh, this is where Elvis Presley. So my main characters, P.T. and Gloria, they will do anything to help the Wonderland. I think having a movie there would be great.
Well, you do, you, and your book is very evocative of the St. Pete Beach as it was, I think more than it is today, but it's definitely, you know, for anyone in this area, wow, it's just such a lovely book to read.
Yeah, I was inspired. We used to, I lived in Buffalo, New York, and then Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we used to drive to St. Pete every August, usually in the middle of the month, for our two-week vacation. And along the way, we'd stop at South of the Border and Wikiwaki and all those great tourist attractions. So I try to put all those, at least memories, or the kind of big fiberglass statues and things on the property of the Wonderland Motel.
Well, you do. I and of course, in the first book, I still love the alligator scene. Yeah, we don't have that. We don't have alligators on the second floor balcony very often, but you know, I think in that story it was really great.
Well, P.T. and Welcome to Wonderland Home Sweet Motel is a bit of a tall tale teller, but and one of the things we're doing with the book is throughout he's always telling stories and trying to teach kids, like, what do you need to do to build a story? And he's always getting a little advice from his grandfather about how to tell a good story.
Well, you know, P.T. is a wonderful character, and Gloria, you've developed really nice characters here.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they make a good team. He's got the story, and she's got the business savvy.
And I love the way it is. He's telling the story.
Right,
present day
point of view.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, which of course, present time. Which of course, they always say, don't do it. But I know you've already heard people say to you, "Don't. Why did you do that?" And you did it. And what the heck? You know, it works.
I did it in my adult murder mysteries too, and it seems to just add to the pace and the drive of a novel if you write in first person like that.
Well, I think so, because I felt like, well, I'm right along there with PT, and yeah, you know, I'm seeing it right as he's seen it, and I enjoy that.
Yeah. Especially in mysteries, that's good, because then you can figure out things as the main character figures them out. So it kind of makes the whole reading experience a lot more fun.
Well, you know, when let's talk about a few of your other books too, because of course we're going to promote this one, and I know that you've got another one coming out in October, and you're going to be
October
back.
That'll be the third in the Limoncello Library series, which since we're talking about Florida, I'm proud to say won the Sunshine State Young Reader Award, the first book in that series, Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library. And it's also going to be a movie on Nickelodeon this fall, so it's going to be a big fall for Limoncello fans.
Oh, that's fantastic, because that is a wonderful series.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. It's been nominated for 40 different state book awards, and I think it's won 22 so far. And I love those, because those are ones that kids vote for. Like, the librarians might pick the ones that are on the ballot, but then the kids read a bunch of books, which makes reading fun again, and then they get to vote. And I've been really fortunate that it's won in 22 states.
Wow. Well-deserved, because it's so much fun to... Well, I love anything. I used to dream. My big dream... I'm from Northern Michigan, but then we moved to Detroit, and we had this wonderful library called McGregor Public Library, and I used to dream that, like, the librarian or the mayor or somebody would get in trouble, and I would have to rescue them and save their life. And then all I would ask as my reward was that I could sleep in the library and just sleep there, you know, over the weekend. Every weekend I could just sleep there, and then I could just roam around and have all these books to myself. And so I used to hope, you know, somebody would attack the mayor while I was around, you know. And boy, I would have jumped in and taken a bullet for the guy just so that I could get that right to, you know, live in the library for the weekend.
That's a great story. You should write that one.
Yeah, I should write that one.
should write that one.
I think maybe I will, because, of course, one of the things, of course, you always throw in a little bit there about the Dewey Decimal System,
mm-hmm.
which I love, because one of the things when I was in school, the first thing I did was, well, I was one of those students that was either really brilliant or really bad, because... I was, you know, I sometimes couldn't concentrate on stuff that I didn't like, because I was already perhaps reading way above that level. And so I became the librarian assistant in the school. So it was so much fun to learn the Dewey Decimal System. And
there's a lot of schools I go to, they have like library aides and teams of kids who help restock the books and all that stuff.
Yeah, fun, and it's really, it makes you really love books, and it's so wonderful. And so, of course, in the Limoncello books, wow, which one is the one,
the very first one, Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library, is the one that's been winning all the awards, and it's a fun book because what I was trying to do is teach kids, especially most of my readers are 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th graders, that doing research, to think of doing research as a big game, like a big scavenger hunt where you go into all the different categories of a library and find different bits and pieces and put it all together, because they're just about entering that phase of their life in middle school and then high school and college where they're going to have to do a lot of research papers. So that was my hope, was to make, when you're 18, I want you to go, research is just a big scavenger hunt. I read that book, Mr. Limoncello's Library, and that they'll have fun doing it.
Well, you know, it's so wonderful when, of course, when we were young, we had those wonderful book files.
The card catalog.
Wasn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah.
I've been actually looking for one where I could just buy one, you know, on eBay or something.
I've
so I could just
seen a
have
few
it.
In, like, antique stores.
Yeah, I just want one, because just that feeling of you know, thumbing through those card files, oh, I used to love to do that. And I'd read all these books that I wasn't, you know, you could read the card of all the books that really weren't for kids, but you
right.
know, it was wonderful, and you'd see things and imagine what it was. And then of course later on, of course, when you could, you know, sneak into the adult side away from the kids section, it was wonderful.
And I liked always in the back where you could see the names of who also checked out the book. And sometimes it'd be somebody from years and years ago.
Oh, I love that too.
As
a matter of fact, yeah. Oh, that's one of my favorite things. That's the joy of it. When kids read books on Kindle, they don't have that same experience that we had. So,
most kids are still reading books. So
it is good, and I love that they have a lot of programs for children at all the book at all the libraries and still at those bookstores that exist. And I know we have a local Barnes & Noble here where they're very active in having children's events all weekend long. And it's so wonderful to see all the kids there enjoying books. And I know they will get your books because the stories are so good, but also the illustrations are great.
Yeah, we have Brooke Allen, who did the Lumberjane series, did the illustrations for Welcome to Wonderland, and they're a lot of fun. It adds a whole other dimension, and again, it gets to that reader who doesn't really love to read. I remember as a kid, if I had a book with illustrations, I would read two or three pages and go, oh, picture, I can take a break and look at the picture. I can read two, three or more pages because there's another picture. So it's kind of like a motivational, like you're going to get little rest stops along the way.
And in your case, these pictures are really great. The illustrations are fantastic.
Yeah, she did a great job.
Fantastic. And, of course, people can also go to your webpage and see it.
I'm just chrisgrabenstein.com, and there's all sorts of – we always put three or four sample chapters up so you can get a feel for what the book's going to be like. And we have silly games and promotions going on all the time. We're working on the Beach Party Surf Monkey Dance Contest now. We're getting videos from kids all over the country are sending me videos of them dancing to the Surf Monkey tune. And we're going to put that together to make a funny book trailer in a couple weeks.
Well, you know, of course, I know that you speak a lot at different events for writers, and you have always been encouraging to writers. So tell my listeners, what is your big advice for up-and-coming writers?
Well, the advice I'll give you is the one that James Patterson gave me when I was a copywriter working for him at J. Walter Thompson Advertising. Always write as if nobody wants to read what you've just written. That you have to earn their attention with every sentence and every page. So leave out the parts nobody wants to read anyway, to quote Elmore Leonard.
Exactly. When you work with Patterson, what's it like? How do you work with him?
Well, it's a lot of fun. I was just counting up. I think we've done 17 books together now for kids. And So we've known each other since 1984 when he was the executive creative director and I was just a junior copywriter. So when we're working on a project, he'll do up a 60, 70-page outline where all the twists and turns and the characters, the plot, everything that's going to happen is laid out. And then I execute against that that outline, send him about 8,000 to 10,000 words a month, and then we talk about the words. And my favorites are when he goes, he says, great, keep going. My least favorite are when he calls me up and says, do you have a pad and a pen handy? That means we have a lot of notes. So then I'll do the, basically I'll do the first draft, and then he'll take it and do the final draft, and it really is a collaborative effort. He's involved in every book. He's the hardest working writer I've ever known. He was back in advertising days, he would come to work at 5 or 6 in the morning and work on his books for 2 or 3 hours before he even started looking at advertising. And he still does that. I think he takes some time off to play golf every once in a while, but he's still the hardest working person I know.
Well, you know, I think that it is so wonderful what the two of you are doing, really to encourage children to read. And by making these books accessible, making them fun, you're both doing a great job.
Well, thank you. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get kids to say, give me another book.
And so the Limoncello is going to be on...
The movie will be on Nickelodeon. We're still trying to nail down the exact date. All I've heard so far is the fall. So there's a big 3-month span for us all.
Well, I think I'm sure it's going to be a big success because...
it's going to be terrific. I got to go to Vancouver where they filmed it and spend a day on the set with the cast and the crew, and I think people are going to be very happy with what they see.
Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to that because, all of your books are wonderful. By the way, I wanted to say I also love the Island of Dr. Liebers.
We just went down to Tennessee where I grew up and went to college, and some friends of mine started a children's theater there, and we've adapted that book into a play, and it was a lot of fun to see the kids being Hercules and Robin Hood and all the characters that come to life on the Island of Dr. Liebers. And they even had that weird theremin, you know, they had that music whenever Dr. Liebers spoke. We got some good theremin music.
Well, that's a wonderful idea too. I found that when children are in plays, they really take an interest in the books behind them.
Exactly. Yeah, this one was all the kids wanted to read. You know, Robin Hood and the Three Musketeers and some of the other classic books that are talked about in the play and in the book.
Wow, that's fantastic. I think that's great. So, you know, I want to. Tell my listeners that, you know, I get so many people who say they have an idea for a book, but they don't know how to start. And now, of course, in your case, you've been a wordsmith for a long time. Words come more easily to you, I think, than a lot of people now. Was it always so? When did you start writing?
Well, I started writing in fifth grade, and then I had a seventh grade English teacher who told me I would make my living as a writer someday, and that really inspired me, so I really started focusing on writing as a craft in eighth grade, and then I had some great teachers at high school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I studied communications, you know, journalism, broadcasting, and advertising in college, and then I wrote for the Muppets, then I wrote a made-for-TV movie, so I've been doing this for a long time, but it's like that book, I think, Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell book, that you have to do anything for 10,000 hours to get good at it. So I think the discipline of doing advertising for almost 17 years, of just going to work and you have to sit down and you have to write. And that, for your writers, just find your, if you can find an hour, a half an hour, some block of time that you are going to do it every day. Because that's another important part about writing, is sitting down and just doing it and giving yourself permission to write a really bad first draft, knowing that no one is ever going to read the first draft because there is no such thing as good writing, only good rewriting.
Well, I think that's great advice for my listeners. So I want to thank you so much for being on today. And
thank you, Patsy.
I'm holding you to coming into the studio the next time you're in town. Just let me know.
That would be great. My mother would love that, too.
What? You know, bring your mother in. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have a mother-daughter. I interviewed a young girl, 17 years old, who got a book deal. And I said to her, well, you know, I want to know the story behind the writer. And so I'm going to have her, Ashley Royer, and her mother on. Because,
oh, that's great.
Because, you know, it's thanks to that mother who really believed in her that she got this book deal at 17 years old.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Maybe my mom. Yeah, my mom really encouraged me along the way. So that would be a fun interview.
Let's bring her in. Why not?
I think, tell you what a nut I was as a kid.
Yeah, we, you know, my listeners always love to hear the story behind the book and behind the author. So that's it. We're going to bring your mom in here. That will be
fun
for me. Okay.
And then we'll, all right.
Then we'll, as they say in Hollywood, we'll do lunch afterwards. Okay.
We'll do lunch. That sounds good.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
So I look forward to seeing you when you're back here in Florida.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
Nice talking to you.
Okay. Well, that's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to having him and visit us here, right here at, in the studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, that I keep telling the mayor, I keep telling everybody that I always talk about glorious Clearwater, Florida, but I don't know. I also want to remind everyone that, you know, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. And recently I have been telling everyone about the absolute wonderful Audible book of A Gentleman in Moscow. If you haven't read it yet, you should get it. Well, if you read the book, you should get the Audible version because it is really great. And if you haven't read the book and you're thinking, well, I don't know if I want to read the book, get the Audible version because once you read the listen to the Audible, you're going to want to read the book. Either way, it works out so nicely. And I'm going to have over the next few months, actually, I'm going to have several people who have done Audible books on their own. They are self-published authors who have gone through the process of bringing their books to an Audible version, which is very popular now. There are many, many people who prefer Audibles because they can listen to them while they're working, while they're doing the laundry, whatever. And so Audibles are very popular. And if you are an indie author, you might want to think about doing that. And I will have several people on who will talk about the process they went through. And it's a fun process. As Peg Herring said, in her case, there were a lot of mispronunciations of words from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I can imagine what they would do to the names because the names up there are so, so funny. It's going to be fun to listen to the Audible version of that book. Anyway, meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Make sure that you treasure it and share it and say something nice to somebody. Today, I will say something nice to Big Ed. He's looking very handsome today. Did you get your hair done? You look good. Okay, looks really good. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him right back because I love to be saluted. This is Patsy with a Z saying bye. Have a nice weekend.